So, boy, I'm so happy that you've taken interest in the Great Leap Forward period. And can you take us through on why you got interested and what led you to study this period of Chinese history?
Yeah, it was it first started when I wanted to know something about my Chinese heritage, and then I read the novel of Yung Chang, Wild Swans, and I read it in through 2000. At that time, it was very popular, and it was published in 1992. That was just after the Tiananmen incident, so you had a lot of literature of people who were in some way negative about the Chinese government, like saying they are repressive, and so I read her book, and she told about three generations of Chinese women, like her grandmother, her mother, and herself, and then and then you came to the communist government, and she told great things happened in the first 7 years, and then she told about the Great Leap Forward, and she now says, yeah, because of the policies at that time, 44 million people died, and she always said, oh, Mao is worse than Hitler or Stalin, and then I read about those policies of the Great Leap, how she described it, like it was so stupid. People made steel on a very large scale and with indigenous methods only, so it was of inferior quality. And then everything couldn't be sold and couldn't be used because the quality was too bad. And a lot of resources were only focused on making steel with those methods. So when the people had to harvest, like nobody paid attention to harvesting, and the crops were just there rotting in the fields. And then you had a drop of the agricultural production, she said. And because the food production dropped very fast, yeah, that's the cause of the famine. That caused, like, yeah, I think 15 till 40 million of deaths. So, and then you know that as a Chinese, and at first you think, oh, communist, and a better equality of resources for the people. Yeah, that doesn't sound so bad. But if you read her description of that period, you think, oh my God, I don't need to know more about, my Chinese background, because if this is what happens, then yeah, okay, that's not much to be proud of. So yeah, then somebody told me, a China expert, he told me it wasn't that the Chinese at that he told me at that time there were trade restrictions against China. So it wasn't only the quality, but the other countries didn't want to trade with China, and that's why a lot of problems, that caused a lot of problems. And then I remembered those trade restrictions, trade embargoes, and after some years I studied Chinese, it's called Sinology, Chinese languages and cultures, and when I had to write my thesis, I thought, yeah, let's write about the Great Leap Forward period, and let's see what happened. What was the policy of the rest of the world towards China, of the Western world? Yeah, that's when I discovered, well, China was already so poor when the communist government came to power. You just can't imagine that. I think large part of the Chinese population had hardly had the means to live, And maybe it. People were forced to sell their children, and their diet was just awful. You don't they didn't eat meat the whole year round, and the property was very unequally distributed. Like a small part of the population, they owned a large part of the arable land. So, and when you have to rent the land because you're a small farmer, it had to be paid in crops, and then it could go up. It was for 40 until 90% of your crops you had to pay in taxes. So I think you can say people were on a large scale were exploited. And like the average life expectancy in 1949 was 36 years old.
Right,
And
and that's not surprising because China was invaded by Japan, and before Japan's full-on invasion, China was a semi-colony of the Western powers. Right.
And you had after the fall of the Chinese Empire in 1911, you had so many wars. You had an anarchy, and there were warlords fighting each other. And
Right.
and after that, you had indeed the Japanese war against China. And I mean, in Holland, we always commemorate the Second World War because 6 million of 6 million Jews have been killed. But then I read in the books like 20 million of Chinese were killed by the Japanese or by the Japanese warfare. And I thought, oh, that's not common knowledge in
Right,
Holland.
right. We don't hear that repeated often. That's right.
Because once a year, a film will be distributed from Hollywood, and in those films we see the suffering of the Jews at that time. That's true. I'm not saying that's not true, but at the other hand, we know nothing about we know not that much about Chinese suffering. Like, I have the idea China is depicted now, like in the media, as a kind of aggressive country, you know, colonizing Africa. Like one of my former professors, he used in some conference, he used the term, yeah, China is colonizing Africa.
Right, that's not true. Africa is.
That's not colonizing, but that's what the Western powers did in Africa, you know?
That's right. And Africa is finally growing because of the trade with China. And
But people are negative about that too. And you know, China is aggressive. China is the biggest polluter on earth. And China is repressing his own people. And that's the view of China when it became communist, repressing its own people, and causing poverty in the country. Like, it's only said when Deng Xiaoping came to power and opened up the country to foreign trade, then things became better. The economy grew. But actually, you see a lot of things happening for common people, 90% of the Chinese population in the 50s already, and that's their standard of living was improved very much. And in 1990, I think 1917, 1960, the average life expectancy was already 60 years old, and you know, 30 years of rule and of communist government, and people. Large part of the population can read or write. And before that, it was like Latin, you know, it's difficult to learn. And most of the people haven't had any education. So, and the industry was built up in those early years. And after that, that's what you build up. So, in later decennia, you can go on those things you already have built up. So,
If you, like one of the things that struck me whenever I watch Hans Rosling, he's a Swedish professor. He has these charts visualizing different societies over time. And I still remember this chart he has showing the life expectancy of China, under early years of communist rule. I mean, it's remarkable. In the 19 50s, 60s, things just took off, just simply because people had food, people weren't being invaded and being killed by these by the wars, right?
I mean, just like you said, in the period that the warlords are fighting with each other, foreign governments, like Western governments, were one sometimes supporting this warlord and sometimes supporting another warlord. It depends on their interests, and so that was not, that was horrible for the population that you almost always has to have those fights. And they had to pay so many taxes. I mean, everybody who can make them pay taxes, who had the power, the manpower, or an army to make them pay taxes, yeah, they had to pay it to them. So that was the situation before 49.
And then the climate, right? You were saying there's a lot of hostility in the West towards communism. And then on top of that, there was 1950s, there was a Korean War where China fought head on against the United States. And so the there's basically a lot of animosity. So the United States actually tried really hard to enforce this embargo on trade on China, didn't it?
But actually, in the Korean War, I think Northern Korea invaded Southern Korea, and then you had the UN army with fighting against North Korea, and China has warned a couple of times, do not pass the borders, the border between China and North Korea. And actually they did that. And in 1951 already, the UN had a resolution that said they wanted one united Korea. So China was facing, something, a united Korea bordering on China with the US behind all that, being so aggressive about China. And in the north of China, bordering Korea, you had all those industries, the heavy industry these days.
Northeast China. Right, right.
So that was quite, how do you say that? That's quite alarming to China, that was going. And when they crossed the border, China invaded. China intervened, let me say. And then China had to deal with all those trade restrictions of the US, starting already in when the communists took some parts of China, took over some parts of China in 49. And then it was built up and built up. And I think in 1952 or 51, all transactions between US persons, private persons and companies and American daughters in foreign countries, it was all forbidden to do for them to trade with China or to have any transaction with China. So until 73, there was no transaction at all between the US and China. No trade, no transactions. China was forbidden to use US dollars. And like other countries were forbidden to, how do you say that? To pay in dollars to China because it was the global currency, and the US government didn't want China to get hold of US dollars because then they can, if they haven't got dollars, it's difficult for Chinese to buy things in.
Famine started from what year and lasted for how long?
The famine started in was already visible in, I think, in 1559 it started, and in 60, 1960, you had famines too.
And
And
what is the official Chinese estimate on number of deaths?
15 million. If you look at the Chinese statistics, you see that you can count 15 millions of deaths.
1-5.
1-5.
Now, what is the common figure that's being published in the Western media or Western literature?
30, but it raises every year.
Right, I think the common number I hear now is sometimes 40 million and sometimes 70 million.
I heard some organization, it's what it's called, the Epoch Times. That's what their newspaper is called. If you say something and that suits the common view or the general view, then you don't really have to come up with facts or with proof. But if you want to say something that is different from the general view, then you have to come up with a lot of proof,
That's
figure
right.
facts. So yeah, people can count up 10 million or more. Yeah, on those death figures, it doesn't matter to anybody. Maybe to us, it does matter, but yeah.
Right. During the famine, the Chinese were actually government, they were actually pretty desperate in trying to import and buy grain from around the world.
Yeah.
And you probably knew. There was a story about this two Chinese guys showed up with two suitcase or I don't know, two or three suitcases of money in
Yeah.
Canada.
Yeah.
And I think it's a pretty famous story. So the Canadian, even with the US being unhappy with them, they actually agreed and shipped a whole bunch of grain to China.
Yeah.
That was purchased using those suitcases of money.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I read it on your website actually. And that's when I came to know about that story.
Right.
But before that I haven't heard of it. Yeah, and you had so many trade restrictions against China because you had the US with a lot of power. They helped Western Europe by ending the Second World War, or they didn't end it, like the Russians did their part too.
Right.
And then you had the Marshall Assistance. Is it called Marshall Assistance?
The Marshall Plan, yes.
The Marshall Plan. So the US, gave a lot of assistance to Western Europe, billions of dollars of assistance. And that was connected to their policies to China too, because there was, I think that was the Battle Act. If you sold strategic products to China, the president was allowed to cut off the Marshall Plan assistance to that Western European country. And strategic doesn't only mean weapons or ammunition, it also includes a lot of things that maybe, that a country needs, like oil or raw products. And so China needed a lot, but couldn't get any credits or from Western Europe, not from the US, not. And they came in a very difficult period, greatly forward. And what you can see is that the trade, the sanctions were not eased in that period. And maybe it had its role in causing difficulties in China. I mean, it is communist, so they had a distribution plan for food, and that helped the people to raise the average life expectancy a lot. But if you want to distribute, you have to buy things to distribute it. And like they wanted to buy textile, cotton, I think, for making clothes for people. But then you had those American policies that wants to cut off Hong Kong from imports from outside because they thought Hong Kong was some how do you say a port.
Yeah, China will use Hong Kong, or people in Hong Kong will be sympathetic and help import these raw materials into China.
But you were true that at that time when China was better had to deal with very bad weather and droughts and how flooding. And then there were problems in the economy, and you see that the policies of the foreign countries, Western Europe, the US, Japan, Australia, Canada did export, sorry, but it didn't change that much. The US were urging them to not trade with China. And then I think the whole world was like isolating China. At that time, China and the Soviet Union already didn't have any relations anymore because they broke, the Soviet Union broke with China in 1960. And so China was really for modernizing the country, you need industrial products, capital goods, and those are products that only Western Europe, the US, and some industrialized countries could provide China with. And they had trade restrictions against China.
Right, so China was really isolated during that period.
Extremely isolated. Yeah, isolated from the modern world. They had some contacts with Africa, but yeah, that was at that time, but back war too, like China.
If they were just being freed from being colonies.
Colonial powers.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
So it's a strange thing is China was always in those first 20 years or more trying to cope with all those worldwide trade restrictions. You had a UN embargo against China. You had a US embargo against China. You had a special committee set up, the Co Coordinating Committee.
COCOM.
COCOM had embargoes, maintained embargoes against communist countries, but the US thought that embargo was not strict enough. So they had to set up in 1952 a special China committee for implementing a more strict embargo against China. And the COCOM embargo against communist countries is already so strict, like preventing the sale of almost everything. And then you had the China embargo that was even stricter. I mean, so it was very difficult for China. I think their whole economic strategy was also focused on how to cope with that and modernize the country because like the farming methods haven't changed from 1500 onwards until 1949. So people were still, they didn't even use cattle the first half of the 20th century because people were paid so bad it was cheaper to have cattle than of to have people work up tilled your land than to have cattle. I mean, it cost less than the food for a donkey. So poor the people were. And the strange thing is you cannot that easily find information about worldwide trade restrictions against China of all those world organizations. I
Right,
mean,
that just never talked about in Western literature, most generally.
because like at first I was reading, maybe you know him, the standard work of Jonathan Spence about the Chinese history. It's called The Search for Modern China. And he is like a huge authority on Chinese history, and he has taught on Yale for 8 years. He was professor in Chinese history. But in that book, you can read about the details of a Chinese diet in the 1930s, what it contains. But the word embargo is not has not been mentioned. And then I think, whoa, that's really strange, you know? And like another book, another authority on the Great Leap, that person on the Great Leap Forward, that's Roderick McFarquhar, and he teaches or taught was professor on a very famous English university, I think Cambridge. And in that book, It's hardly mentioned too, maybe with one word or but not
Wow.
giving any information about it. And then I think that that's very str yeah, I think
Right.
that that's strange.
When you did your thesis on this period,
Yeah.
what were the reactions from your professors or your peers?
Actually, I studied at the University of Leiden, and except for one teacher there, Stefan Landsberger, there wasn't anyone who had knowledge about that. Yeah. Actually, I almost have written it myself with the assistance of the China expert I know, and my boyfriend helped me with it too, because I hardly had any, how do you say it, supervision. There was one professor who who gave me the grade, but actually I did myself. But and you know, when I after that I wrote the thesis, and then I made a radio documentary, and then I could speak on some conference about I made an effort to make to find some way to give my information to the general public or a broad public.
Good for
So I
you.
made the radio documentary, I spoke on a conference, and at that conference two professors were there too, and they didn't agree, I think, you know. And my general view is like, people don't really, you can at first, the first thing is it's difficult to identify with people who die on their 30s, 36th or 40s, age of 40. It's difficult to identify with very poor people who have to sell their children. And it's just so far from your own situation, you know. So what I was saying is the situation in China was like that, you know. You have those people who could hardly survive. And a small thing can happen, and millions of people died. And the second is that, like journalists with whom I talked, or others, because I wanted to give some information to journalists or others working at newspapers. And the general view is, but this and that and that, the Tiananmen, the incident happened, and the Cultural Revolution, and a Great Leap Forward. So you cannot say that it was like they didn't really matter what accomplishments the government had made and what that meant for people. It was like that's not that important an information. It's more important what happened to the elite, you know, and that people have to give up the land, because you had the land reforms in which the land property was redistributed, taken
Right.
away from landlords and redistributed to the people. And for a lot of people, their lives became better because
Right.
they had something to live from.
Right.
And so that was my experience. Like, yeah, but the Chinese government did this and that too, you know.
Right. I
They
mean,
did.
like my mother's side of the family, they were wealthy during the so in the 40s, they knew they had to escape. So they actually escaped to Taiwan, and their property were confiscated. And so, I mean,
But only
those were dramatic and miserable times, right? There had to be a reset because you had 99.9% of the population can barely survive because of the war. They had to reset.
a large part of the population could hardly survive,
Right.
and you have a small part who Actually, you can say, I don't say that all the rich people, wealthy people were exploiting the poor people, but there was, yeah, the people were exploited. If you have to pay taxes to anybody, that can make you pay them, and sometimes 20 years in advance, and
Oh, wow.
40 till 90% of your crops, I mean, that's something.
Right.
And so life was very difficult for
Right.
people.
Right.
And if you have a dramatic situation of inequality in a country, and a large part of the population can hardly survive, yeah, maybe you should redistribute something. And what I have know is that only the land was taken from wealthy landowners and farmers, not other property. Is that true? I mean,
Their
you
home,
have background.
yes. Well, my maternal side grandparents, their homes were confiscated and redistributed,
Okay.
but over the years, the Chinese government has allowed some redress, so they could apply and reclaim these lost property. And so, yeah. So even with well, my parents, when we were still in China. After Nixon's visit and relations normalized, even starting just in the early 80s, some of my maternal grandparents' side properties were reclaimed because they have proof that this belonged to them and they were taken. And so there was some redress.
The trade, the economic warfare was erased from Western information. In Western academics, it is almost erased. So then you have one government maybe implicitly says, look what you have done to our people, and the other one just erasing that information. So then you have, look what Mao has done to those people. So it's very difficult to say, but I think, yeah.
So, Bui Bui, I guess, but the Chinese government do take responsibility for this 15 million people. If they had better policies in place, perhaps they can handle this this circumstance better, you think?
No, I mean, they have done all they could, because at the moment they were aware of the famines, they immediately stopped the policies and tried to import millions of tons of wheat from other country wheat from other countries. And so they did all they could, and they were you can say they were forced to do a great leap forward, because they wanted to modernize that backward method of farming, and they needed farm implements, they needed steel for that, they needed vehicles, tractors to for agriculture, and all that couldn't be imported from the West because you had those trade embargoes. And in 57, the China embargo was lifted, and at that time the Great Leap Forward started. So they suddenly could import a lot of things that wasn't possible before. So they suddenly like raised the production plan and started the Great Leap Forward at that time. And yeah.
I see, I see. In your view, what's like to be someone of Chinese heritage in the West or in Holland? Or what to you, what does it mean?
Yeah, I'm very proud, actually. I mean, China is one of the China was not a normal colony. China was something maybe you can call a hypocolony. No, they were colonized by a lot of countries,
Right.
not by one. You had
Yes.
Germany and Shandong, and you had Great Britain in Tibet. You had France in southern China.
Right.
So it was exploited by a lot of
Many,
countries.
okay,
And
yes.
a lot of colonies, they have not been able to really become independent and to have independent policies because of neocolonialism, maybe because foreign companies had a say in how the country is run.
Right, they own a lot of the resource or control a lot of the resource
Yeah,
or
exactly. Like foreign companies control their resources, they are indebted maybe. But China is one of the few former colonies that has accomplished to become independent in a certain way,
Yes.
and to raise the living standard of the people a lot. So I think if you look at a lot of former colonies, you have fighting, you have domestic wars, and it's still very bad there.
Right.
And with China, that's different. They it succeeded in something. It has become a lot better already since 49. And you have those third world country problems like illiteracy, and that healthcare is only for people who can pay that. But I have researched like the first 10, 20 years, and at that time I see that Chinese people have become much better in those areas, A lot of people learn to read and write, and
Yeah, China's literacy rate is very high.
so that's done in the first 10, 20, 30 years while Mao was still living. And I think if you really suppress your people, you don't have to teach them to read and write. You must keep them dumb,
Right.
And like something is missing in the common knowledge or common information. And like when I learned about the simplification of the Chinese script, I was learning Chinese, and then you have simplified Chinese already in 1954. The script was simplified because you had mass illiteracy and you wanted to learn people read and write. And then you took like in 1950s and 60s, they took 2,500 characters and most used characters and simplified those because of the mass illiteracy. But that is not all. When I was studying, they only tell you for you had simplified script, but the broader picture of how the situation is in the country and the broader motivation for that policy has not been told. That's
Right.
what you had to look for yourself. So there's a lot of information missing about China. And if you connect it, you see that, actually they have done a lot for a large part of the population.
Right.
And
Right. So, Bui, back to my question. Like, for
yeah, sorry.
example, when I see what it means for me to be Chinese in the West, I feel like, yes, I feel like in some ways it is defined by so much misinformation because they don't say it directly, but the way they keep on focus on all the negative views about China is an indirect, it's almost like an indirect attack on everything relates to China. They often don't separate the government from the people from the culture. And then you, right, if I talk to my friends, they get a very negative feeling about everything related to China. And you almost feel like there's a severe lack of respect that you accord to normal people. And
Yeah,
that's
but
because of the negative information.
you know what I like, I know what you mean. I have the same experience in Holland, even with my former fellow students, you know, they are also very negative. But that's because some information is not given to us. And we think in Holland, I think we think propaganda is only something that communist countries do, or, you know, bad governments and dictators, they use propaganda. But your own government will not use propaganda and is only giving reliable information. And I think if you're an immigrant, you have a different attitude to your, maybe you're more critical towards your own new government. And some information has not been given, because I did the research. I wanted to give the information to more people in certain ways. I tried to write on Wikipedia. I thought Wikipedia, okay, it cannot be used in China or not, Wikipedia.
Wikipedia might probably is blocked. So I think the major one, I mean, most websites are actually not blocked, but Wikipedia, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, right? These are the major ones that are blocked.
I mean, what I want to say, and I will give some details about it, is that not every information is given to us. It is restricted too in the West. Not in a way that you will end up in jail if you say something, but if it doesn't fit in the general view, maybe it will never be published, you know? Because I wanted to write about the trade restrictions against China, the enormous, rigid, strict trade restrictions that have caused, I think, have caused problems in China. And I thought Wikipedia is a very open forum, and everybody can write about everything and upload it and make a page so you can inform other people. So I put the information with the years and the sources, you know, I gave sources that were books, and I made a page, and somebody was, how do you say it, erasing it all the time. It's not erase. What's the word that I can use?
Edited or
No, just
delete
took it,
it? Just simply
delete
delete what you wrote.
it. So my page about trade restrictions, something that China has to cope with for so many years and causing maybe so many problems, surely it would have caused many problems, was deleted all the time. I upload it. After 5 minutes, somebody deleted it, and again and again. And you cannot say that I didn't, you have to give some sources, you know. I gave a lot of sources because it was from my thesis. I had the sources that stressed the information. So that's already that it's not open. And I was at a conference. I was speaking at a conference, and there was a Dutch journalist from Radio RNW, and that's Radio Netherlands Worldwide. And she was a sort of correspondent in China, and she told us, yes, I wanted to write about more about, or you know, not report about everyday life of Chinese, and more about what people are going through normally. And I, but the staff was always asking for environmental pollution, repression of minorities. So there were a lot of a couple of subjects that the chief editor and the people who could decide on the staff always wanted. So it had to fit in those subjects, only those. Because if you read the newspaper, you think the only thing that happens in China is environmental pollution, suppression of minorities, And in a big country like China, with 1.3 billion people, nothing else happens than those things. I
Right.
mean, people encounter other things in their lives, you know.
Right.
And when I hear what she, I heard what she said, I thought, oh, so some the information is has already been how do you say that? Chosen, you know. Some
Yes.
people, yeah, it has to
That's
fit.
what we find. It's
It has to fit in the general view, and otherwise it is left out. And that,
exactly.
and like you have interests too, because I wrote for the only magazine about China in Holland. It's called China Nu, what means that means China Now.
Okay.
And then I wrote an article. I mean, professors of our university wrote for that magazine too, and many China experts in China in Holland write for that magazine. So I wrote about Jiangxi province, and in that province, the what is that called? The like the communists had to flee from the nationalists, and
Right,
they went the
the 10 kilometer march to
yeah yeah
Yang'an, right? That's where
yeah
they,
yeah yeah
that's their
yeah
base.
yeah yeah that's when they had to march, I think maybe 10 miles, no, 10,000 miles,
10,000 kilometers.
yeah, 10,000 kilometers to. And then they set up one Soviet, you know, in Yan'an. And so I wrote about the purge of the nationalists against the communists.
Yes.
There was a mass that they caused a mass massacre under the communists. And then the chief editor told me, yeah, but it's a story about traveling, so why do you write about this political things? And I thought, yeah, the whole tourism in Jiangxi province, a lot of that is concentrated on that part of history.
Right, yeah,
And
not right.
yeah, so I think it's quite normal to say that. And then because of that story, they didn't want to publish it. I was They didn't want me as an editorial member anymore.
Oh,
I
wow.
was sort of sacked as an editor. And
My
I
God.
was like, whoa, what is happening here?
Wow.
I think that is very strange. And I always had the feeling, the editors always, many editors wrote negative things about China, and they didn't let the sources say it. They said it in themselves between the lines. And I think that is strange. If you're a journalist, let your source say things about China, yo. You
Right.
don't have to say it yourself. But afterwards, I searched on Google, and I found out that the publisher was a travel publisher of China Nu, China Now, was Vereniging Nederland-China, VNC, and they got a prize. The travel agency got a prize from the Taiwanese president for being the best Taiwan promoter. And then I thought, okay, I didn't know about those interests behind the magazine, you know. I didn't know that the publisher of China Now was the best Taiwan promoter. That's kind of strange. And the Taiwanese president himself gave the award. So it was not like I write you a letter. He gave it himself. So I was thinking, oh, you have a lot of interests here too, you know, when it concerns China. And that thing about Wikipedia, and maybe it's not that open and free that we think the press is. No, we would have, yeah, we should have a free press, but how free is that? I mean, like what I said before, we won't end up in jail, but will our things be published
if it doesn't fit the general view,
Right.
maybe they will just, maybe you just won't be heard and your information will never be read, just like that.
Just like that, right?
And like you can understand Chinese.
Right.
So when we have a national broadcaster, it's called NOS, and it's paid by the Dutch government. So yeah, if it's paid, then you can say, "Huh? Is it state media?" Or, and maybe it's like BBC. They have a news. They have news too, and
Yes.
it was 60 years of People's Republic commemoration in China. At the time, it existed 60 years, and then you had programs like 60 years of repression, and then some source in China, a nephew of, not a nephew, but a nephew of his nephew. I don't know how you say it. There was a wrong translation because he said, "文化大革命最大的错误是打道一切." You know what it means. Like, I think it means the greatest mistake of the Cultural Revolution is that everything was 打到.
It's like
You can fill it
defeated,
in.
like
What?
defeated or
Turned down. Broke down or
yeah.
something like that. And then it was translated by the national broadcaster with Mao suppressed everything and everybody.
Yes.
And they have just like millions of people watch it. And I was like, oh, the whole Mao wasn't mentioned, So it's a wrong translation. And that was in a radio report. And then I wrote them about it, that I think it's not right to translate it like that. And then the correspondent called me the next morning or the next afternoon and said, "No, he has said that, but in radio interviews, you know how it is. You have to, you cannot give all the quotes, you have to choose out from something." And afterwards, they had like an item on TV with the same translation as a subtitle. So then it's not true what he said. So I'm like, oh, people are not, you have to be very, I think it's strange to translate it like that.
Right,
And
right.
so I think.
Yeah, and that's how propaganda works in Western societies. Seriously, the propaganda is already unspoken secretly between the editors, between the people who fund the media organizations, and
Maybe,
that's how it works.
I will not really say it's propaganda, but I really think there are a lot of interests that maybe don't want such a more positive view about China. Because actually, you and me know China is really how do you say that? Casualty? Maybe, is that the word?
China has been a victim. So many people has been a
Sorry.
victim.
And that's what I want to say. China has been a great, great victim in history. When one of the victims that has succeeded to climb out from a very depth that it is thrown in,
Yes.
and every information that supports the fact that China is a victim has not been published, like those 20 million of deaths during World War II. I didn't know it, and I think most people in Holland don't know it.
Yeah,
So,
well, even you remember Christian Bale and Zhang Yimou was making this history piece about the Nanjing massacre, and when the film was being promoted in the U.S., many U.S. media criticized the film as propaganda for the Chinese government, which is a horrible and incredible thing. Can you imagine? Can you imagine any media in the West criticize like Steven Spielberg's film about the Jews,
Schindler's.
right? You're gonna have that media organization being burnt down, probably.
Yeah, really, they will be burned down.
I know, which, it's incredible.
Yeah, but I think in the US it might be even more difficult than in Holland. I mean, because the policies of those trade restrictions and like really trying to isolate China also diplomatically was from the US. Those were US policies also forced upon Western European countries. So I expect that the information in the US about China is even more negative than in Holland. I think I can expect that, yeah.
That makes sense.
But
That
yeah,
makes
but
sense.
you know, if you know it yourself, at a certain point you will think, yeah, I know it and I write about it. And I write about it on my website, like you do on Hidden Harmonies. And then you reach some people, and some people are really interested in those information that is missing in general academics. So then it's okay, you know, because we don't really have a say in the media, or because if you're powerful and you have a lot of money, you have more then you have maybe more relations with the media, and it will be easier to get your story published. And for other people, it's more difficult.
You did your studies in this period, and you're telling our readers about it, and
Yeah.
I want to thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. And yeah, I will follow Hidden Harmonies and read the articles about what your editors have to say about those
Okay,
subjects.